Hey, I'm Kelly McEvers, and Embedded is back. And we recently realized it's hard to assess a politician who has virtually no political record. But with Donald Trump, we tried anyway. And we wound up with stories and lessons from the record he does have in business and on TV. Listen on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Linda.
Stephen, do you know what we didn't get when we started this show? We didn't get investors.
We did not. We could have made it into an online startup where we put water cannons in our office.
It might be clear by now, but today we are going to talk about the ABC hit show, and it is a hit show, Shark Tank. For those of you who don't know what Shark Tank is, you get a group of wealthy investors who listen to pitches for people who have invented something.
It might be an app, it might be a toy, it might be a belt that can hold a beer can.
That's right. And then the investors decide whether they are going to invest in the business, and they negotiate with the entrepreneur, sometimes competing with each other, to get the deal.
It was hugely successful for several years on the normally dead zone of Friday nights, and it's just been moved to the much more active Sunday night lineup.
But before we get started talking about Shark Tank, let's introduce our other panelists. You know Glenn Weldon, who writes for NPR.org. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
And with us this week, fresh blood for Shark Tank. The fresh blood that we have with us. We have a brand new fourth chair, but not a new voice to those of you who listen to, among other things, the NPR Politics podcast. We are welcoming NPR White House correspondent Tamara Keith.
Hi.
So I have heard that you are a Shark Tank person. I have been hearing this for a while.
This is true.
That you watch Shark Tank.
I'm not a consumer of a lot of popular culture, but I am a big consumer for reasons I don't fully understand of Shark Tank.
I'm not sure anyone understands why they watch Shark Tank. I love Shark Tank, but I'm not sure I could explain what it is I like about it. Can you think of anything that you like about it that's easy to put your finger on?
Yes. I think that it is relatively uplifting.
Mm-hmm.
It is low on sort of personal drama.
Right.
It does require you to think. You might even have to do a tiny bit of math while watching the show.
It's true. Because they'll say, you know, I'm offering you 10% of my company for $200,000. And then you kind of have to be in your head like, okay, so they're saying the company is worth around $2 million. Oh, okay. And they do royalty deals with percentages.
Loans.
It is a TV show that has more math than most.
Yeah. And it's not that I'm good at math. I mean, I'm a political reporter, not a science reporter.
Right.
But I enjoy, like, sort of thinking through the deals. What would I do in this case? You know, I like shouting at the television and saying, why did you go with that deal? That's a worse deal. Why would you do that?
Right. Absolutely. Because sometimes the one shark. So the sharks include some people who are sort of already well known, right? Mark Cuban is on this show most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Damon John, who created FUBU, the clothing line, is often on. There are a couple of other people who are not quite as well known, but are, you know, became well known through this show.
Including like Lori Grenier, who is known as the Queen of QVC.
Right. So she has kind of her own specialty in QVC, and she's always looking for the product that's going to sell well on QVC. One of the great hits of Shark Tank, and you'll see this if you ever go to like Bed Bath & Beyond, and I think you also will see them but also like at Target, you'll see them. She did this deal with this guy these people who made little scrubby pads, but they have a happy face, and it's something like it's a firm scrubby pad if it's in hot water, and it's a soft scrubby pad if it's in cold water, or the other way around. And they're like, you see them in every Target now. And I always think, boy, Lori Grenier does some weird stuff, but boy, she made that Mr. Scrubby Happy Pad work. I don't remember what it's called exactly. She makes a lot of deals for those little houseware things, whereas some of the other ones, Mark Cuban and some of the other ones, like to make more glamorous, like they seem more excited about like glamorous projects. Like Mark Cuban loves tech.
Yes, because as he will tell you, he made his money in tech.
Yeah.
That's the other thing is like they are constantly like reasserting why they are famous, incredible business people.
Exactly. Exactly. And Barbara Corcoran, who's one of the two women in addition to Lori Grenier, who is the most commonly on, was a real estate person. So she talks a lot about real estate, although she also now talks a lot about the leggings company that she made famous. Glenn, I am so curious.
Yeah, I am too.
I am so curious. what you took away from us making you watch Shark Tank.
Yeah, I had never seen the show because I suspected it wasn't for me. Mm-hmm. Because I don't have an entrepreneurial mindset or spirit. I've never had an original idea in my life. I'm a critic. That's what I do.
Don't feed that.
If you want to make my eyes glaze over, if you want to dispel me like I'm a demon, if you want to dispatch me to my home dimension, you just have to say words like valuation, growth, mm-hmm. distribution, and scalable. Mm-hmm. Or you have to say, as they said at one point in one introduction, innovation in the camping space. Like, nope. So I suspected I'd be indifferent. Mm-hmm. That's okay, right? Because this show is a diversion. This is a show to fold laundry to, and there have to be many shows like that.
That's true.
I also thought, since I'm such a process nerd, I like to figure out how things work, what the logistics of everything is. Maybe that would hit those receptors in my brain. So I was prepared to be kind of indifferent. I was not prepared to hate it as much as I did. This show, and I'm taking this far too seriously, I get that, but this show is built on the proposition that selling somebody crap they don't need is somehow noble. Or romantic, or brave.
Or I'll tell you what they do treat it as, and that is American.
Exactly, yes. Exactly. This is late-stage capitalism, the show, and that's fine. But they're just these fawning profiles of members of the investor class, like, which I gather is new this year, right? Like the, all that stuff
and
about...
New in the last year or two,
season 8 has a lot of it.
That they do, like... Ta-da, famous person who invests money, and that's how they became more famous and rich.
Yeah, and so this shares some of the conceptual DNA of The Apprentice, which is why I had the same kind of hate-hate relationship with The Apprentice. These stilted pitches that the show is built on, they do not entertain me. They're just cringeworthy, and we'll talk about the sharks. I guess we have to call them the sharks, even though that rubs me the wrong way, because if this show is called Dragon's Den, like it is in the UK, mm-hmm. I think I'd like it more because dragons are cooler. Than sharks. That's just science. They all evince to a man, to a woman, this kind of suit bro sensibility I just find repellent. And if you are pitching a show to me and you say, well, it gets really exciting when they start haggling over percentages,
I am
checked out. I have lots of questions about this show. Right. I have a lot of questions about why. The very question you asked earlier, why do people like this? I've talked enough. So let's hear from folks.
Tell me what you're thinking, Sam.
It is different than The Apprentice in a lot of ways, in that the climax of The Apprentice is someone failing.
Mm. Right. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, every show, it's about firing somebody. And there's a certain negativity to that. Mm-hmm. Whereas this is intended to uplift. Like, for the most part, the goal is for people to get deals mm-hmm. and to, like, have their crazy little dream to make a Wibble Wobble cup or whatever it is, mm-hmm. or to have that realized.
This show has Mark Burnett all over it. Mark Burnett is the producer who brought us The Apprentice and brought us my least favorite television show maybe ever, Undercover Boss.
Undercover Boss.
Oh, yeah. But also Survivor.
But also Survivor, which I love. Mm-hmm. But looking at his business shows, you have The Apprentice, which, as you said, Tam, has a negativity to it, but also a capriciousness to the outcome that ruined a lot of episodes of that show. Undercover Boss has this deification of executives, mm-hmm. Often at the expense of working people, in a way that I find really objectionable. This kind of gets around that by making it a little bit more of a puzzle. I walked into the show with that skepticism about Mark Burnett on business.
Right, right.
And by like 20 minutes in, I was like yelling at the TV, like, oh, that valuation is just way too high. You know,
you have no idea whether that's true or
right.
not.
Or like, how will that scale? Yeah. It took me probably two episodes to get to how will that scale.
How will that scale? Is there anything proprietary about it?
Yeah, those margins are terrible.
Yeah.
I think, to answer the question of why people like it, I found myself really enjoying the act of predicting where the problems and complications will arise with these pitches. Because mm-hmm. very few people are coming in there with a perfect pitch. Very few people are coming in there with like a product everybody wants, where they've made the right valuation and the right math, where everything adds up and everybody's just clamoring. There's usually some problem that has to be identified and possibly either solved or not solved. And I think that is fun and interesting. And every once in a while, you'll get people called on their crap in ways that I find really fun. There's a guy, I think early in season 8, this very voluble pitch master guy. Was blah, 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 blah. And Mark Cuban, who I'm very ambivalent about Mark Cuban.
Yeah, me too.
But Mark Cuban calls me and says, I don't think I can do business with anyone who says,
Yeah.
And I loved that.
Yeah. Another thing about Cuban is very specifically offended by pitches that he thinks are like snake oil, that he thinks are like like health claims. There was somebody who had one of these, like, you put this bracelet on and it aligns your inner energy forces or whatever. And basically, Mark Cuban was like, you're a scam artist and the equivalent of, like, a person who was like a snake oil salesman. And I would never do business with you because I'm offended by the entire existence of what you're trying to make.
Good for him.
And that does happen sometimes. And it surprised me the first time or two that it happened. But now I kind of know it's his thing.
But here's my question. In Re the Sharks, as you get to know them, I don't know these people. They're all interchangeable to me right now. As you get to know them over the course of multiple seasons, do they become less odious and less bloated on their own self-regard? I saw an episode where I think it was Cuban. It was one of them who was, how dare you come in here even though you've already made money? You don't need us. You don't need my expertise. Where does that come from?
It comes from having a lot of money and also being on television and the power of those two things to make you feel like people shouldn't bother you with their normal lives, I feel like. But I do think the Sharks, in a very subtle way over time, and I in no way am I defending this as some kind of great show. I'm engaging it on the level that you're asking about it, right? I do think that they reveal themselves over time to have different strengths and weaknesses, right? Yes. There was an episode recently where a woman came in with a thing that was basically a stuffed animal attached to a hairbrush.
I saw it.
And she said, my daughters complain all the time about me brushing their hair. I basically put together a little stuffed animal with a hairbrush, and now they much more welcome having their hair brushed, right? Because it's a cute little animal. That is the kind of thing where I may think it's dumb, but you can find stuff like that in stores all over the place. And if that exact thing doesn't already exist, that's a good idea, right? Mm-hmm. And only Lori of QVC valued that idea at all because she thinks like a person who watches QVC, whereas Mark Cuban tries to think like a tech investor. And like sometimes they've had as a guest Chris Sacca, who will come in and start talking about how he was an early investor in Uber and all this other stuff. And he goes,
like, every 5 seconds he says that.
He's got to remind you.
Back when I was investing in Uber early on.
Whereas Lori does have this, she's slightly more interested in kind of mass-produced consumer, on the one hand, you could say junk, and on the other hand, you could say things people wish to buy. You'll see her pop up sometimes in TV commercials for things. There's one with like a fitness board that you twist on, and you can see her on there because she went for the plastic twisty board. Yep. And there is a difference between the ones who are going for the thing that's like, this is a super exciting product, and Lori, who's like, I'm going to sell those on QVC. I'm going to put those in Walmart, and I'm going to sell an absolute squillion of them. And I would not be surprised if on a, like, how many people actually buy the thing, if she's, like, the massively like most successful one. Not necessarily in terms of volume of money, but number of purchasers of the things.
I do like the way you can kind of predict the motivations of each person with each product. And I enjoy kind of doing the equations in my head of like, Mark Cuban's going to go for that because Mark Cuban is a billionaire who wants to be loved.
Yeah.
And this product feels noble. Mm-hmm. Or like you said about Lori, like she will be able to sell that on QVC, or Damon John will be interested because it has something to do with fishing. Robert Hershevik is kind of, I think, the most game for weird, silly, like, let's throw $50,000 at that and see what happens.
He's the one who invested in Tipsy Elves, ugly sweater, the ugly Christmas sweater company that apparently has made like a gazillion dollars.
Yeah, and yet he loses out on a lot of deals.
Right.
Like he's like people's backup shark.
Yeah. the phone call they make at 2 a.m.
Yes.
Here's my other question. I think you've already touched on it, but I mean, if you had kids, I can see watching this show with kids because there is information that gets passed along about a topic I find very boring, but I think maybe American kids would find interesting, right?
And
what?
I'm going to say,
it's like educational about
capitalism.
Business. Yeah.
I'm going to say maybe not just for kids, but maybe also for me.
Mm-hmm.
I knew very, very little about this kind of deal making when I started watching Shark Tank. I still know very little, right? But I feel like maybe I've been to the first week of undergrad business 101, right? Because I did learn just the simple, like, that the way you get an investor is they take a certain amount of equity in return for X amount of money, and that's based on what you think the value of your whole company is. The way that you'll have, like, a round of investors who invest when you value your company at X, and then when you come in later, if you say, well, now the value of my company is much greater, they're paying the same money for a smaller amount of, of the company. So
Sorry.
Yeah. But my point is, like, those are things that to me, like, it's a new thing to know, presented via people coming in and being like, all right. So, and I have to credit Andy Dennard of Reality Blurred for this observation, but a lot of people who come in who are like, basically, it's a towel with a hole in it. Except it's a poncho, or it's a thing for when you cut hair or whatever. And that's how I've learned all those things that make Glenn snore.
So my husband is an entrepreneur. And so we watch it. In part, like, thinking about, well, what's the next step for your business? And would you someday want to get an investor? Or, like, you know, he sometimes has these meetings with people. And it becomes, like, sport around real life, except more fun. And my husband does not invent towels with holes in them. Or he does, like, apps and testing training online. Like, totally not Shark Tank-worthy kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Part of me wishes there were fewer, like, hey, I've got this goofy gadget, and more, like, interesting business concepts.
Right.
But the, hey, I've got a goofy gadget does really well on the show because then the second somebody goes on that show, people immediately rush to their website and buy it. My understanding is that Shark Tank actually takes a cut.
They used
just
to.
For a oh, they used to. Just for appearing, though, because there is a Shark Tank bump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the funny thing is, I'm the opposite. I want the goofy gadgets because, to me, it's only when it's a real business idea that I find it boring.
So, like, that would be the opposite of me.
Well, so the thing that was so funny is I remember I watched the show for a really long time, and you can kind of see them be like, they throw around a certain amount of money and blah, blah, blah. And you can always see when all of a sudden they become extremely serious. And it's not always around fun products.
Right.
Like, there was an episode one time where a guy who was a firefighter came in and he had developed a different way of attaching hoses, fire hoses, that was supposed to be faster than the way that they unscrewed the cap and then screwed the thing back on. And it would save, like, X amount of time. And it just went snap. And the idea was you could sell them to all the fire departments who needed them to attach it to a fire hydrant. And he was like, oh, yeah, this is my thing. And they were psyched about it because if it's good, then you get to sell it to all the fire companies if they decide that it's something you need for safety. But then all of a sudden they were like, yeah, but the thing of fire departments is not, like, that big of a market. And they said, well, would it be possible to extend it to garden hoses? And he was like, oh, yeah, I have that one in my pocket. And he pulls it out and it's a little prototype for one that would work on garden hoses, meaning for your garden hose, you wouldn't have to screw it onto the thing and then unscrew the thing. It just goes snap and it attaches the hose.
So you can save time to make sure you can water the raspberries? Why is that a thing?
Do you know how lazy people are?
Okay.
Have you ever seen an individually wrapped hot dog? People don't even want to unwrap a hot dog and put the rest in a baggie.
Mm-hmm.
They want an individually wrapped hot dog. They sell cereal in individual containers with milk. And it's because people are, if you think people aren't too lazy to buy a thing that would make attaching your garden hose into a one snap thing, you underestimate what is truly American about Shark Tank. And that is, it addresses the laziness of the populace. Anyway, they became very serious about that, even though it wasn't that whimsical.
Speaking of whimsical, one thing that I have come to appreciate about this show, one of my fears with this show was that it was going to be a parade of stupid, humiliating pitches from wacky idiots.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
That it was going to be, that there was going to be this kind of American Idol style. And every once in a while,
there's an element of that.
It happens occasionally.
But it's rare.
But it's not necessarily like a completely idiotic thing. There's usually
it is, but yeah.
There were these two guys who came in dressed in potato costumes whose business was like they would mail somebody a potato with a message scrawled on it, and one of them bought it.
Well, that's because Robert bought the Funny Ugly Sweater Company, and it did very, very well for him. I do want to ask, Tam, I heard that you had some thoughts about kind of gender dynamics with this show, and I was curious about what those were.
It's a couple of things. One, it does feel like if there's a rotating visiting character, usually it's a dude who replaces one of the two women.
Yeah.
And for a while there was only one woman at a time.
Right.
And often they, you know, there was a recent episode, I don't even remember what, they were trying to sell rings, and so it's complicated. But anyway, they brought in these very muscular men.
Oh, yes.
And they'd be like, Barbara, we've got some muscular men for you. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, ew, can't the women on this show just be fellow sharks and not get completely stepped on by the dudes, like not get into these weird yelling fights with Mr. Wonderful? Can we just let the women be equals?
Yeah, I agree. And I think it is true, especially with Lori, that because she does QVC, there is some interesting gender dynamics around the fact that, like, she's the one who does QVC and retail at, like, places like Bed Bath & Beyond. She is thinking about women. She is thinking about selling to women most of the time, and not necessarily wealthy women. She's thinking about selling to women who do a lot of the purchasing in the United States. So I think sometimes when guys like Cuban and Chris Sacca, they like to cultivate an idea that their investment stuff is more sexy.
Yeah.
And I think she's much more like, I'm going to put this in an end cap at Bed Bath & Beyond and make more money than you, you know, even though your thing might be cooler.
Did she do the squatty potty?
I can't remember who did the squatty potty, but yes, the squatty potty was on Shark Tank. And again, people laughed, but a lot of people have a squatty potty now.
Yep.
Hey, have you ever been in a house and, like, been in the guest bathroom and been like, oh, squatty potty?
I have not.
Me neither.
But I know of people who have them.
Yeah, RuPaul herself was hawking them on Drag Race.
Really?
Really.
Nice. Well, Shark Tank, you know, does go out into the world and intersect with your life in unexpected ways.
More than most reality shows do, including ones that try to intersect with actual life.
Yeah, I know. It's true. All right, well, let us know what you think about Shark Tank and who your favorite shark is. That's what I want to know. Who's your favorite shark? Mine is Lori. Come and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet at us at PCHH. When we come back, it's going to be time for our favorite segment of this week and every week, what is making us happy this week. So come right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Brooklinen. They make luxury sheets at non-luxury prices. By cutting out the middleman, they bypass costs and pass the savings on to you. With Brooklinen, they offer two different types of weaves: buttery soft luxe, soft, smooth, and perfect for year-round comfort, or crisp and cool classic, lightweight and breathable. Mix and match your way to bed perfection. Shop now at brooklinen.com and use code HAPPYHOUR to get $20 off plus free shipping.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It's time for our favorite segment, What is Making Us Happy This Week? Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week, buddy?
A few weeks ago on this show, we talked about The Princess Bride.
Yes.
And what The Princess Bride has in common, for at least the three of us who were in that room at the time, is that we were teenagers when it came out. And it became a cult favorite for us, and obviously for many, 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 many other people. It's fun for me to occasionally witness that happening to my own kids with new movies. And over the weekend, I took my 13-year-old daughter, who loves horror movies, to the theater to see Happy Death Day.
Mm-hmm.
And if you looked at the box office returns over the weekend...
Just you guys?
No.
Oh.
Number one.
No. Oh, wow.
It beat Blade Runner.
Oh, wow.
This movie that cost $5 million to make made $26 million. We had to wait around for an hour because the screening we went to was sold out. And my daughter, 13 years old, flipped for this movie. She went to it like, Dad, take me to Happy Death Day. And I take her, it's PG-13. Mm-hmm. So first of all, your horror movie is probably not explosively grisly
right, right.
if it is PG-13. It's basically, it is horror Groundhog Day. Mm-hmm. Jessica Roth, who's she was in La La Land. She's very fun in this movie. She plays a mean girl who sort of keeps reliving the day of her murder. And so what unfolds over the course of this very Groundhog Day-like structure is a mystery where she has to figure out who kills her at the end of this day. Mm-hmm. It's not resolved until you figure out this puzzle. And mm-hmm. so you're figuring out this puzzle along with her. This movie is not Groundhog Day. It's not Edge of Tomorrow. But it is very fun. And my kid loved it. If your kid loves this kind of thing and they have not already dragged you to Happy Death Day, let them. It's fun.
Thank you very much, Stephen Thompson. Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week?
You know what I got, Lynn Holmes?
I don't know.
I got new rules. I count them.
One, don't pick up the phone. You know he's only calling because he's drunk and alone. Two, don't let him in. You have to kick him out again. Three, don't be his friend. You know you're going to wake up in his bed in the morning. And if you're under him, you ain't getting over him. I got no rules. I count them.
That is Dua Lipa. She's an Albanian pop princess from London. Gay Twitter has been talking to me about this woman for months and months and months. And it took me a while, but I'm here now. So let's focus on that, okay?
Uh-huh.
I'm like the Vatican to the fact that the Earth revolves around the sun.
Yeah.
Let's just focus on the fact that I got it now. It's called New Rules, which I'm ambivalent about because anything, I don't usually love anything this Bill Maher adjacent. But
yeah.
If we ignore that, you gotta see this video. It is set in Miami, as you could probably tell from the production of that particular song. It has a pronounced girl power aesthetic, so it scratches some of the same itch as Lizzo. The dancers around her are fantastic, and you keep waiting for her to break out, right? When's the dance break? When she's going to go nuts? And she just kind of shrugs and walks. But, so she's one of a long line of pop divas who can't so much dance. But
sure.
That's not her thing, right? That's not her thing. It's a really, really fun song. The whole album called Dua Lipa is fantastic. And once you've finished watching this video, you'll see in a box along the side the opportunity to watch the boy version, which is just a bunch of gay dudes reenacting the video. I highly recommend that as well. That's by a guy named Jake Wilson. It's so much fun. Dua Lipa, New Rules.
Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Tamara Keith, what is making you happy, if anything?
Yeah, there's not a lot making me happy. I was searching around for things that were making me happy and mostly finding things that were not making me happy.
Yeah.
However, I have to go back to the well that I go to frequently, which is the Star Wars well.
Mm-hmm.
And there was the new trailer that came out, I guess it was last week. There is a small creature who makes a very brief appearance next to Chewbacca in just very quickly. You see this screeching little thing called a porg.
Mm-hmm. Porg.
Porg. And I know it is called a porg because I went to Wikipedia to find out more information about it.
Wikipedia, she said.
Wikipedia. It's like a bird-like creature, allegedly. It's like a puffin. It lives in the cliff sides, just like the puffins. I love puffins.
Yeah, if you want to know more about what this thing is like, Tam thought it was a bird, and Glenn thought it was a hamster.
Yeah. I thought it was a hamster.
The big question, and, you know, it's an outstanding question, which we will not know the answer to for several months, is this bird hamster going to be annoying and terrible? You know, am I going to react to it as I did to Ewoks as an adult? Or I hope it isn't vaguely racist like Jar Jar Binks was. I mean, it does seem like a naked ploy to sell plush toys.
Sure. Yeah,
it does.
Sure.
And yet I want one.
Yeah. Yeah.
It worked completely.
Yeah. Once you know that it's not annoying or racist, you can buy the plush toy. Sounds perfect. Thank you so very much, Tamara Keith. I was in New York this weekend, and I went to a piece of off-Broadway theater that was recommended to me by NPR's own Peter Sagal, along with a couple of other people. I went to see the magician Derek Delgadio's show, In and of Itself, it's called. And he's a very accomplished magic guy, and he's had a couple of previous shows that have been very successful. In and of Itself is, it's a piece of theater that incorporates magic. So it's like the purpose of illusions and pieces of magic as an art, the purpose that they serve is not just for you to say, ooh, I don't know how that happened. That's so interesting. Not that I'm against that, but, you know. And the purpose of it is to be part of a story and to have to say something about the human condition, the way that he uses it here. This show started off as an off-Broadway show with a relatively short run planned. It has now been extended. It's now, you know, there is time to see it. If you read about Derek Delgadio, what you will find out about him is that he is less famous than he would be if he were not averse to going on television. He's averse to going on television because he thinks that what he does is destroyed. So I was reading a profile of him that said he's turned down a bunch of offers to go on late night shows and other places where people become famous. And there's not a lot of him on YouTube, and it's because he thinks you have to see it live. So I treated myself to a front row seat for In and of Itself at the Daryl Roth Theater near Union Square. It was so wonderful. I am so thrilled that I saw it. The audience is kind of part of it in this profound way, and it's wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. So again, Derek Delgadio's In and of Itself at the Daryl Roth Theater in New York. And that is what is making me happy this week. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen. You can follow Glenn at G.H. Weldon. You can follow Tamara Keith at Tamara Keith NPR. You can follow our producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy, and our producer emeritus and music director, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, KATZIF. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music, which you are tapping your foot to right now. So thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
Welcome. And thanks to all of you for listening, and we will see you back here next week.